Okay, so I'll switch to, I noticed Gong had a different numbering for me in her notes, and so I'll switch to that. So this is, we're now, if I'm not mistaken, on standard model and beyond number 23. Okay, and I remind you that last time we motivated the idea of switching from groups as the fundamental object to taking algebras as the fundamental object, and then the groups that we knew and loved would then arise as the symmetries of those algebras. And so we had begun last time by reviewing the basic algebras that we'd be interested in. So we had the smooth functions on a manifold. We met the n by n matrices with complex entries as a second example. We had the norm division algebras, R, C, H, and O. And then we had also met Lie algebras. Okay, and we said they came in three infinite families. There was SON, which were the n by n real matrices that were anti-Hermitian or anti-symmetric. There were the n by n, there was SUN, the n by n complex matrices that are anti-Hermitian, and SQN, as I'm notating the symplectic Lie algebras, those are the n by n quaternionic matrices that are anti-Hermitian. And then there were five famous special cases, G2, F4, E6, E7, and E8. Never know quite when I run out of space here. And let's say E8. Okay. And just to review quickly, we were regarding all of these, you know, we're going to be primarily interested in real algebras here, and we were thinking of all of these as real algebras, algebras over the field of real numbers as their field of scalars. And just to remind you, so this guy had the smooth functions was infinite dimensional, but this guy, you remember that it has real dimension 2n squared. These guys are real algebras. They have dimension 1, 2, 4, and 8. And then these guys, it's a good exercise to check for yourself, to check, make sure you understand what I mean when I was talking about anti-Hermitian matrices with entries in the real numbers or complex numbers or quaternions. It's a good exercise to check that these guys have dimension n times n minus 1 over 2. These guys have dimension n squared minus 1. And these guys have dimension n times 2n plus 1. Okay, and then because we'll need it a little bit later while we're at it, so let me tell you the dimensions of the exceptional guys. So G2 has dimension 14. F4, the next biggest one, has dimension 52. E6 has dimension 78. E7 has dimension 133. And E8... granddaddy of them all, has dimension 248. Okay, so those are those are final five weird set of numbers. That's famous numbers from Lie theory. Good. Now, our last example, the last kind of algebra we wanted to meet, the fifth example here, are Jordan algebras. So here, the idea is that Jordan algebras, you can think of them as very much the flip side of the coin of Lie algebras. So remember, with Lie algebras, the way we motivated it is that we said, well, suppose we wanted to make an algebra out of anti-Hermitian matrices. Well, we couldn't just take the ordinary matrix product of two anti-Hermitian matrices, because that wouldn't be another anti-Hermitian matrix. So instead, if we wanted to get another anti-Hermitian matrix, we had to take the commutator, the matrix commutator of these two matrices. That would give us another anti-Hermitian matrix, and that would be a Lie algebra. Well, Jordan algebras arose because Jordan wanted to do the same thing for Hermitian matrices, because these were the early days of quantum mechanics. This was like the late 20s and early 30s. And people had realized that Hermitian matrices, that every observable in quantum mechanics was a Hermitian matrix, and every Hermitian matrix seems to be an observable in principle. Normally in quantum mechanics, as it was formulated by Dirac in the sort of standard formulation, you worked with the algebra of Q's and P's over phase space. You worked with them as the associative algebra of operators using matrix multiplication. But the consequence was that most of the operators you formed that way, for example, Q1 times Q2 times P3 times Q2, is just not a Hermitian operator. So most of the elements in that algebra are actually not observable, even in principle. And so Jordan wanted to find a reformulation of quantum mechanics working in terms of just the actual observable stuff without carrying around all this excess baggage. So he wanted to form an algebra of Hermitian operators. And so again, he realized a similar thing here, which is that if you just, the product in that algebra can't just be the ordinary matrix product, because that's no longer a Hermitian operator. But what you should do is you should take the anti-commutator. Okay, the anti-commutator of H1 and H2, which is, whoops, I wish I knew what exactly I was hitting. I think this is not designed for left-handed people, and so keep somehow getting myself out of. Okay, the anti-commutator of H1 and H2, which is defined to be H1 times H2 plus H2 times H1. Okay, and just like in the Lie case, you know, that gave rise to this product using the bracket, using the commutator, gave rise to the general notion of a Lie bracket. Okay, and it had these two properties. The first was that it was the bracket of two objects was anti-symmetric. Okay, which is, of course, is true if that's just the commutator of two matrices. And then also that it satisfies the Jacobi identity. Well, let's first say that the bracket, the product formed in this way, taking the bracket of two matrices, is not associative, because if we first take the bracket of A and B, and then we take the bracket with C, that's not equal to first taking the bracket of B with C, the second two elements, and then taking the bracket with A. Okay, you can check if these are just ordinary matrices, those two sides will not be equal to each other. So associativity fails, and so in part two here, what we instead do is we replace associativity with a new identity, which is the Jacobi identity. This identity that this is the replacement for associativity. Okay, so there's a similar story for the Jordan algebras. Okay, now, once again, you can check that if you take the Jordan product, H1 comma H2, and then you take the product of that with H3. By the way, just like the commutator is sometimes abstracted and called the Lie bracket, the anti-commutator is sometimes abstracted and called the Jordan bracket. So if you take the Jordan bracket first with H1 and H2 and then with H3, you know, again, and then you if you check if that's how that compares to first taking the bracket of H2 and H3 and then taking the bracket with H1. In other words, putting the parentheses in the other order. Again, if you just check that for matrices, you'll see that that's not equal. So again, the Jordan bracket is not associative. And so instead, a Jordan algebra is analogous to a Lie algebra. It's an algebra that satisfies two properties. Property one is that, well, Lie algebras were anti-symmetric, but the Jordan algebra is symmetric. So if we take the Jordan bracket of two guys, it's a commutative product. Okay, which of course is true if you check the anti-commutator. And then again, our second identity is a replacement for the associative property. And in this case, well, you can check in this case that the property that matrices, that this product has instead of associativity, which you can use, it's an easy exercise to check that this is true for matrices, is that if you take, let's define x squared in the obvious way. X squared just means x comma x, the Jordan bracket of x with itself. Then suppose we take an arbitrary element and we hit it on one side with x. Okay, you know what else? Maybe to make notation a little bit simpler, I will have an alternative notation that I'll sometimes use, which is just that I'll call this x circle y. Okay, that's just a sort of more shorthand notation for the Jordan bracket. It's just a simpler notation for the product. So let's say that we hit this guy on both sides. We take an arbitrary element y and we hit it on one side with x and we hit it on the other side with x squared. But now since it's not associative, we have to figure out where to put in the parentheses. And the Jordan identity says that for this combination, it doesn't matter where you put the parentheses. So okay, so that's the so-called Jordan identity. Okay, so that replaces the Jacobi identity for a Jordan algebra. Great. Now, Jordan had this idea that just like in a Lie algebra, he was going to abstract these were all sort of properties that he inferred from matrices, but then. Really what he wanted was the sort of minimal, he wanted to see what sort of quantum mechanical systems were possible. And he wanted, so in particular, he had this, he had these matrices of observables. So he had these algebras that he wanted to represent algebras of observables. And the key thing in quantum mechanics that you need for an observable is that it be decomposable into, you know, what do you do with an observable in quantum mechanics? You take that Hermitian matrix and you decompose it, you diagonalize it so that it can be written as a bunch of orthogonal projection operators onto orthogonal states, each one times a real eigenvalue. And then the rule is that when you make a measurement, the outcome will be one of those eigenvalues. So it turns out that an algebra will consist entirely of elements with that property, entirely of observable elements, if and only if it satisfies these first two axioms and a third axiom called the Euclidean axiom. So the first two axioms define a Jordan algebra. If we add the third axiom, we get a so-called Euclidean or formally real Jordan algebra. And that is just saying that if you take if the sum of the squares of a bunch of elements, let's call this if the sum of a bunch of squares is equal to zero, then those elements also have to vanish. Ah. Okay, this is called the Euclidean property because it's just like in Euclidean space, if you take a vector in Euclidean space and you take its dot product with itself, you get a sum of all of its components squared, like in this first equation. And then it vanishes if and only if all the components vanish separately, as opposed to in Lorentzian space where we would have, where we might have some minus signs in here, in which case we could have a vector whose square vanished even if the components were non-zero. Okay, so the point is in a Euclidean Jordan algebra, you don't have that. Okay, so then, so Jordan proved this nice theorem that every element has a nice spectral decomposition into real eigenvalues times orthogonal projectors if these three axioms hold. And so then right after that, there was a famous classification of these guys. Just like the classification of Lie algebras by Killing and Cartan, there was a classification of the Jordan algebras by Jordan and von Neumann and Wigner. And they found that, again, analogously to the Lie algebras, they fall into several infinite families. An exceptional case. Okay, in this case, just one exceptional case. So let me first tell you what the infinite families are. So the first infinite family, I'll call J spin N. These are sometimes called the spin factor algebras. Okay, and basically these are, well, one way to say it is that every element of this algebra, this is the set of elements of the form it's an ordered pair of where the first element is a real number, and then the second element is an n component real vector. Okay. So all elements like that, and the idea, so it's a real number and a real vector, and you take the pair, and now, so it's, you can add these elements in the sort of natural way, a and a vector plus the element b, b vector is just the element a plus b, comma, a vector plus b vector. And then you can also take their product. Their product is also pretty obvious. A times a vector times the element b times b vector. Well, its first component is sort of all the natural ways you can get a real number here. So you can either take a times b, but then you can also take a vector dot b vector, that'll give you a real number. So that's the first component. And now the second component of the vector is all the natural ways to get a vector. So you either take a times b vector, or you take a vector times the real number b. Okay, so that's the product rule. So you can check that that is a Jordan algebra. It's a formally real Jordan algebra for any n, and that gives the that's the first infinite family. Okay, and then the next guys are a little bit easier to state. These are just the, so I'll write it as HN of C, or HN of H. So these are the real, the N by N Hermitian matrices with real entries. So when they only have real entries, Hermitian just means symmetric matrices is what I'm talking about. And then N by N complex Hermitian matrices, or N by N Hermitian matrices that are where the entries are quaternions, okay? And so those are all the infinite families of simple Jordan algebras. And then there's, in this case, it turns out instead of five exceptional cases, there's just one exceptional case, which is this very beautiful object, fascinating object, which will be important to us and was a big discovery in mathematics, which is H3 over the octonions. Okay, so in other words, what we're talking about here are 3x3 Hermitian matrices where the elements are octonions. So let's just write it out a little bit more explicitly what we mean here. So an element of this, each element of this algebra is a 3x3 matrix. it's Hermitian. So each element has to be equal to the conjugate of the element on the other side across the diagonal. So along the diagonal, that means we, you know, as usual, we can only have real elements. So we have three real numbers along the diagonal, alpha, beta, and gamma. But then off the diagonal, we can have, let's say over here, we can have a full octonion, a full eight-dimensional octonion, and we just have to have the corresponding barred octonion over here, and then we have another octonion X2 here, but we have to have its bar up here.
Just a quick question. The conjugate is where we put the minus sign in front of all the...
Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you very much. That's exactly
another one.
The conjugate in all of the... Okay, let me just write this before I forget. Yes, thank you very much. So a general octonion is some real number A0 times the first octonionic basis element E0, which is actually just what we also usually call 1, and then plus A1 times the next octonion, which is the first imaginary, and then okay, we go up to A7 times E7. So we have seven imaginaries, E1 through E7, and the conjugate, yeah, X bar is just where you leave this, you take the same thing, but you flip. Maybe I'll just use the erase tool. The conjugate is where you flip the sign in front of all of the imaginaries here. Yes, thanks. Exactly. And same for the quaternions, you would now have three imaginaries in the quaternion case. And so when we say over here, when we're talking about Hermitian matrices over the quaternions, we mean that across the diagonal, the elements are related by flipping the imaginary pieces. Exactly. Okay, so this is what an element of the exceptional Jordan algebra looks like. If you count up how many real dimensions it has, the dimension of this algebra is a real algebra. Well, we have 1, 2, 3 elements along the diagonal, and then we have 8 times 3 is 24 real dimensions off the diagonal because we have three octonions. So the total dimension here is 3 plus 24 is 27. Okay. For all of these guys, the product in the first case was a little bit different. I told you how that worked, but for categories 2 and 3 here, the product is just we take these n by n matrices, and we take their product as mentioned before. We take their anti-commutator. We just take the ordinary matrix product of x with y plus the ordinary matrix product of y with x, just as if they were ordinary matrices, with the only difference now being that if the entries are quaternions or octonions, when those entries hit each other, you have to make sure to keep them in the right order because they're no longer commutative algebras. And then you have to evaluate their product using the octonion or quaternion product, if you see what I mean. Okay. Yes?
Sometimes the notation of a square is very confusing. Because it happens to be the square, the algebra product square is different from the matrix product square. So if you write an element x and you say x square, apparently it means 2x square. And the other one is just the matrix 2x times x.
Because I should have a 1/2 here?
I don't know if you should have a 1/2. I'm just saying that at this point it's confusing.
Yes, you know, there actually is a kind of there are two conventions one can take. So a lot of times people actually define this product with the extra 1/2 in here, and to avoid that confusion, let's do that. From now on, let me just clarify one thing. Whenever I write this notation, this curly brackets notation, okay, that will always mean the usual anti-commutator with no factor of 1/2. But then let's define the Jordan product with the circle to be 1/2 of that. And then that will avoid the problem that Gong was just mentioning. And it will also make it the case that x times 1 will be equal to x.
Maybe a question. I'm just curious because here, for example, for matrices, there's this nice thing that the Lie product will be, there would be this matrix product, but it would be, in fact, if we know the Lie product and the Jordan product, we know another product, which is just the matrix multiplication, right? We just sum and we
get right, there. Right. That's right. In principle, you can define it either way, but it is true what Gong says that it's, well, anyway, yes. It's basically what you say. Because your intuition is already there for the matrix product and what x squared means in that context, it would, if you don't have the 1/2 there is a clash of notation, even though there's no actual formal contradiction, like you say. It's really two different products. And they, in principle, can have two different squares, but... Okay. Let's see. Okay, great. So, now we've met all of our algebras that we'll need. So now, the next thing I want to try to take us through are what the algebra automorphisms are. What are the symmetry groups of these algebras? Okay. Okay, so an automorphism is an isomorphism that maps the algebra to itself. Okay, and what we mean by an isomorphism of a mathematical object always depends on exactly what kind of mathematical object we're talking about. So if we're talking about just vector spaces, well, the only property that a vector space has is that you can take linear combinations of the vector space you can take linear combinations of elements in vector space and get other elements in vector space. So the linear property is the only key property. So in that case, an isomorphism would just have the property that it, well, it always has to be invertible. It always has, and then if we were just dealing with a vector space, we would also just ask that it be a linear transformation from the vector space to itself. In other words, so that it respects the linearity of the vector space. Okay, but now we have an algebra. And so an algebra is not just a vector space. It has this extra bit of structure that you can multiply two vectors to get another vector. And so an automorphism of an algebra has to also respect that property. So we want it now to be an invertible map from A to A, basically a matrix that maps any vector in A to another vector in A. But we also want that matrix to respect the product in the sense that if we take alpha acting on a product of two elements in the algebra, that is equal to the product of alpha acting on each element separately. Okay. And now often, so the automorphisms of an algebra form a group. It's easy to check that those satisfy the properties of a group. And often it'll be a continuous Lie group. And just like with Lie groups, it's often easier or simpler to work with the Lie algebra, the infinitesimal generators of the Lie group. That's that's very much true again here with algebras, with algebra automorphisms. And so let's look for a minute at, so which leads us to the idea of derivations of an algebra. Okay, these are the generators of the Lie group of automorphisms. So to see how these work, let's consider automorphisms very close to the identity. Okay, so we're gonna work with automorphisms of the form 1, the identity matrix, plus some little small matrix D, and take this equation here and expand it to first order in D. Okay, so if alpha is 1 plus D, well then to zeroth order, alpha, the left-hand side of this equation just becomes A1 times A2. And then to first order in D, we also get D of A1 times A2. Okay, now let's look at the right-hand side of the equation. Alpha of A1 to first order becomes A1 plus D of A1. And alpha of A2 becomes A2 plus D of A2. So then if we make that a squiggly equal sign, and then if we continue to expand the right-hand side to first order, we get A1, A2 from multiplying the two factors there. And then to first order, the other terms we get are D of A1 times A2, and then A1 times D of A2. And then we drop the D of A1 times D of A2 term because that's second order. Okay, so now the A1, the zeroth order terms cancel on both sides, and we're left with the defining equation for a derivation. Okay, so a derivation is a linear map from the algebra to itself that satisfies this Leibniz rule that you're familiar with from working with derivatives, that D of A1 times A2 is equal to D acting on the first factor times D of A1 times A2 plus A1 times D of A2. Okay, so that's the definition of a derivation. And you can check that if you have two derivations, it's easy to check now that if you have two derivations, D1 and D2, that their sum is also a derivation, and also that their commutator, D1 comma D2, is also a derivation. So the derivations form a Lie algebra, as you would expect, because they're really just the generators of a particular Lie group, namely the Lie group of automorphisms. Okay, so the name of the Lie algebra that the derivations form is they form the derivation algebra of the whatever algebra A they're associated with. Okay, so it's usually notated der A. And similarly, the automorphisms form a Lie group, which is usually denoted aut A. Okay, so that's what they are, and that's the story in general. And now we just want to get to know. We want to get the lay of the land. What are the automorphisms and derivations of the algebras that we'll be interested in? The ones we just talked about. Okay, so the first thing that's good to check is the following. So if the algebra A is an associative algebra, or a Lie algebra, then for any element A and A, little a in the algebra capital A, the operator D sub A, defined by taking the commutator with A, is a derivation. Okay, so just to explain a little bit what I mean by this, so D of A is a map from is a matrix that maps any vector in the algebra. Let's say it's a vector X. So dA maps X to a new vector dA of X. As follows, it's just defined to be the commutator of A of X, A with X. So we put in our vector X and we get out a new vector, commutator of A with X. A new element of the algebra, I should say. So to check that it's a derivation, we want to see that we want to check that dA of the product of X and Y is all for any X and Y is always equal to, if we fix A and take now any vector, any elements of the algebra X and Y, we want to check that that's equal to dA of X times Y plus A times, yeah, plus X times dA of Y. And so in other words, for an associative algebra, where the that would amount to just checking that the commutator of A with X and Y is equal to the commutator of A with X times Y plus X times the commutator of A and Y. And so if this is an associative algebra, for example, you can think of the elements of the algebra as all being matrices here. A, X, and Y are just matrices, and the product is just the matrix product, and the commutator here is the matrix commutator. Then it's easy to check that is right. And alternatively, if the product here is the Lie product, so we if xy is really the Lie bracket xy, and all of these guys are really the Lie brackets, and the definition of the derivation here again uses the Lie bracket, then again you can show by virtue of the Jacobi identity that this equation is still true. Okay, so I went through it a little quickly here, but that's an easy exercise to check that for any associative or Lie algebra, so for all basically all of our first four examples, except for the Octonians, this simple formula of taking a commutator is one of the derivations, and for most finite dimensional cases, actually, these will be all of the derivations, but in some cases not. But anyway, this kind of derivation is called a inner derivation. And sometimes there can be other outer derivations, but often not. Okay. But what about for the Octonians? They're neither an associative algebra or a Lie algebra. And same thing with the Jordan algebras. They're neither an associative algebra or a Lie algebra. So what are the derivations in that case? So in that case, there is a more extended formula that works, which is that for any two elements, if I choose any two elements in the algebra and fix them, that gives me a derivation d sub x comma y. This is for, sorry, did I say that? I'm worried I didn't say this. So this now works for any alternate algebra. This is a statement for any alternative algebra, which I remind you, alternative means that if you take the associator A, B, C, so this is defined as A, B times C minus A times B, C. An alternative algebra has the property that the associator is anti-symmetric under swapping any two of its three arguments. And so in particular, all of our norm division algebra is K, R, C, H, and O are alternative algebras. So for alternative algebras, in other words, for any of our norm division algebras, the derivations look like this. We pick two elements, any two elements of the algebra, and then they act on an arbitrary element of the algebra A as follows. There's two famous formulae that are equivalent to one another. So first you take the commutator of X and Y, and then take the commutator of that with A, minus 3 times the associator of X, Y, and A, okay? So again, this now maps a given vector A, a given element of the algebra A, to a new element of the algebra given by this formula, and it satisfies the derivation rule. Or another equivalent way to write this is that it's 1/2 times, you know what, in fact, let me not write the second, forget about the second version, I'm worried I'm just going to confuse you with the second version. We'll do it if we need it. I wonder whether I can get around using it. Okay, so what you'll notice about this guy is that, first of all, it is explicitly anti-symmetric under swapping X and Y, because here we pick up a minus, if we swap the arguments X and Y of the derivation, we get a minus sign from the commutator here. We also get a minus sign over here because it's an alternative algebra, so the associator is anti-symmetric. So D of X, the derivation D of XY is just the opposite of the matrix D of Y X. So it looks at first glance, so now suppose we took X and Y to be, you know, we have, let's consider the quaternions. In the case of the quaternions, you know, how many options do we have here? Well, there's four basis vectors for the quaternions, 1 and ij and k. But if we take either x and y to be 1, well, actually the derivation will vanish. We won't get a non-trivial derivation because the commutator here of 1 with anything vanishes, and the associator here of 1 with anything also vanishes. So D just vanishes in either of those cases. So the only non-trivial case we have is when both X and Y are imaginary elements. So maybe X is I and Y is J, or X is I and Y is K. If X and Y are both I, if they're both the same imaginary element, then again, it turns out that both of these terms vanish. So the only non-zero elements are when we have two, X and Y are two different imaginaries. So in the quaternion case, if we count how many different derivations we have, well, there's three imaginaries to choose from, and we want to choose a pair of them that are different. So we're in 3 choose 2, okay, which is just 3. And so indeed, that's the right answer. There's three derivations. And if you look at the list of simple Lie algebras, you'll see that this is there's only one case. So the automorphisms of H are just the automorphisms of the quaternions are the unique simple three-dimensional Lie algebra, SO3, or in other words SU2. And in the octonions, well, now it looks like we have 7 imaginary octonions to choose from, and we want to choose 2 distinct ones. So we have 7 choose 2. So that's 7 times 6 over 2 is 21. So it looks naively like there are 21 guys to choose from. But it turns out that actually not all 21 of these are independent, because it turns out there's another Jacobi-like identity that these derivations satisfy. So they satisfy an identity like this, that D of X comma Y, D with its first argument as X commutator Y and its second argument as Z, plus D of, if we now take the cyclic permutations of that, Okay, that vanishes. And that turns out to give seven constraints. That turns out to give seven independent constraints. And the way the picture of how it works is like this. So here's our picture of the Fano plane for the Actonians. Okay, I'll just sketch it here, but so the idea is we had 7 points the set corresponding to the seven imaginaries here. So pick any point here. Okay, so let's pick, for example, this. So here I'll label them I, J, K. Guy in the middle is L. Now up here we have LI, LJ, and LK. Okay, so pick any imaginary. For example, let's pick I. Well, any imaginary is intersected by exactly 3 lines in the Fano plane. Okay, in this case, it's this line, the altitude, there's the circle here, and there's the lower edge of the triangle. Okay, so if you think of those 3 lines, those split up the remaining 6. We picked our one imaginary I, and so there's 6 left over. They get split into 3 pairs by those 3 lines. For example, one pair, if I start with I, I have one pair being the other 2 guys that lie on this line on the bottom edge. The second pair are the other 2 guys that lie on this line, the circle. And the other pair is the other 2 guys that lie on this line, the altitude. Okay, and so what one can check is that if you take the sum of the 3 derivations whose arguments are those 3 pairs, that's what vanishes. Okay, so with I, we would have always going in order of the arrows on the diagram, which I haven't drawn, but you can look back at my previous one, we would have LK, LJ, and then plus D of LI, comma L, and then plus D of J, comma K. That vanishes. And so we have an equation like that for each of the 7 Actonians. And so instead of having 21 independent derivations, we actually have 21 minus 7 is 14. Okay, and if you look back at my previous slide where we were counting up the dimensions of the different Lie algebras, I'll just flash back to that for a second. You'll see that there's only one simple Lie algebra that has dimension 14, and it's G2. Okay, and so that's exactly what G2 is. This Lie algebra here is exactly G2. It's the first exceptional Lie algebra. Okay, so we've learned the meaning of the first exceptional Lie algebra, G2, the smallest one. So G2 is exactly the Lie algebra of derivations of the Actonians. And so in other words, capital G2.
Why is it called G2?
Well, G2 is a historical naming that goes back to Cartan and Killing and during their classification. I actually don't know the historical origin of that. They had a particular way of they named the 4 classical Lie algebras AN, BN, CN, and DN. And then the exceptional cases, for some reason, they named 3 of them E, and then, you know, if you look at the Dinkin diagrams, sorry, I do know the reason, yeah. If you look at the Dinkin diagrams, the cases F and G are not a natural extension of any of the other ones, whereas the 3 cases, E6, E7, and E8 are just... they're all the same Dinkin diagram, but with one node removed, and you just get a smaller one. So anyway, that's why it's just an original naming for how to classifying all the Dinkin diagrams. Okay, so there we go. So now I just want to. Okay, yeah. So the final thing I wanted to say is now let's talk about the I'm sorry. So just to summarize for the norm division algebras, actually. So we have R, C, H, and O. Now, if you look back at that formula, you could also apply it to R and C, and you would actually find that there's no derivations in either case. Okay? So the derivation algebra is zero dimensional. This corresponds to the fact that there are no non-trivial automorphisms of the real numbers. And for the complex numbers, the only non-trivial automorphism is mapping I to minus I. So that's a Z2. It's a discrete two automorphism group. It's just two elements. So there's no Lie group associated with it. There's no like infinitesimal generators of that group. But for H, we found that it's SO3, it's three-dimensional Lie algebra. And for O, we found that the symmetry group is G2. Fine. Now let's finally end up with during the last few minutes, I want to explain what are the symmetries, what are the derivations and automorphisms of the Jordan algebras. And then we'll have the basic tools we'll need to, getting the symmetries of the Jordan algebras, and in particular the exceptional Jordan algebra, sets the stage for writing down this more general formula for the so-called magic square, which we want to understand. Okay, so let's look again at the at the at the at the at the Jordan algebras we had before. We said the first infinite family was these spin factor algebras J spin N, and there were the three sort of infinite families that were all similar to each other: the Hermitian matrices with real elements, the Hermitian matrices with complex elements, and the Hermitian matrices with quaternionic elements. Sorry, this was supposed to be an N. So the N by N Hermitian matrices with real, complex, or quaternionic elements. And then finally, the 3 by 3 octonions. Okay, so here, because it's not going to be immediately important for us, I'm just going to quote the answer here. So for this case, it's just the automorphism group is spin N. In other words, it's the double cover of SON. But for these guys, the automorphism group will turn out to be what you might guess. We have SON for this one, SUN for this one, and the symplectic group SQN for this one. In other words, these are the Lie groups generated by these Lie algebras the three families of Lie algebras that we met before. And then this guy is going to be the next exceptional Lie group, F4. Okay, that's going to be the automorphism group will be the Lie group F4, and the derivation algebra so just to use the notation a little bit here, so the automorphism group of this algebra, okay, let's say we call this algebra A. The automorphism group of this particular algebra A will be the Lie group F4. This is a common notation where the Lie groups often are referred to with capital letters, the corresponding Lie algebras are lowercase. And so the corresponding derivation, the Lie algebra, the infinitesimal generators of this automorphism group will be the exceptional group F4. So let's see why that is. Let's at least motivate where that comes from. So let's think about these Jordan algebras where we're looking at Hermitian n by n matrices whose elements are drawn from the norm division algebra K. So here K is, again, either R or C or H or O. If K is associative, so in other words, for any of these first three cases, then again, one can check that a derivation dA is given, acting on an element of the algebra X is the commutator of A with X, where this is now the matrix commutator. And here what I mean is that, so X is any element of the algebra. So X is an n by n Hermitian matrix with elements in K, whereas A is any n by n anti-Hermitian element, anti-Hermitian matrix with elements in K. Okay, and so so remember that the product in this algebra is this Jordan product, X comma Y. And so to check that this derivation really is a derivation, to check that this formula really does give a derivation, what we want to check is that if we take the commutator with the product, that we should be able to apply the Leibniz rule. So we're taking the commutator of A with the product X and Y, but then that should be equal to first taking the commutator with the first factor in the product, A with X, and then taking the product of that with Y, the Jordan product with Y, or first taking the commutator with Y, first having the derivation act on Y, and then taking the Jordan product with X, okay, applying the Leibniz rule. And that's an easy exercise to check as long as A and X and Y are matrices whose elements, this is an easy thing to check. You'll be very familiar with this for the case where, I mean, not familiar with, but it's any case. It's easy to check for ordinary real or complex matrices. But even if the elements are quaternions that don't commute with each other, this, as long as X and Y are Hermitian and A is anti-Hermitian, this identity still holds. And so it turns out that all of the derivations of those Jordan algebras, the HNKs, where K is one of these three associative norm division algebras, are given in this form. Now it turns out that what about when K is the octonions? What if the elements of the matrices are octonions? Well, it turns out that this still continues to hold when K is the octonions, this still holds if either n equals 2, so we're dealing with 2 by 2 octonionic matrices, or if n is 3 and A is also traceless. Okay, and then if we try to go to n bigger than 3, it doesn't work. Okay, and this is a common thing. Similarly, if we went back to the definitions of the classification of the Jordan algebras, we have this classification. You might ask, what about H4 of O, H5 of O? Well, what happens is that if you try to make 4x4 or 5x5 octonions, that the Jordan identity no longer holds. And so a lot of the nice properties that come from the Jordan identity no longer hold. So this is a theme that many things that are true for the first three norm division algebras are also true for the octonions, but only for the 2x2 or 3x3 octonions. Okay, and so in my, let me, I'll just take 2 minutes here to finish the story here. So we were saying that when K was one of these associative norm division algebras, then this formula here gave the most general derivation of that corresponding algebra Hn of k. Now, we just said that if n is 2 or 3, that this formula still gives a derivation, provided that A is traceless in the n equals 3 case. We want to study the n equals 3 case now because I'm trying to tell you what the derivations are for the last case, the exceptional Jordan algebra, which is the 3 by 3 Actonians. So these are still derivations, provided that A is traceless in the n equals 3 case and where K are the Actonians. But they're not all of the derivations because there's another kind of derivations that we can have, which is just another kind of derivation we can have is where we take an element of the algebra and you see, the previous derivations, we were hitting this with a, we were taking the commutator between this, the matrix commutator of this element of the algebra with a 3x3 Hermitian matrix, with a 3x3 anti-Hermitian matrix. And so we were mixing up the 3x3 components with one another, the 3x3 components of this matrix with one another. And so, but there's another kind of derivation we can do, where instead of mixing up the matrix components of this 3x3 matrix, we just leave all of the 3x3 components in place, but we just apply a derivation to the Actonians themselves, which just leaves the 3x3 components in place, but takes each Actonian and mixes its eight dimensions up with itself, okay? So if you see what I mean, if you apply the same, you take your element of the 3x3 Jordan algebra, and instead of mixing up its 3x3 components by commuting it with some 3x3 matrix, you just leave each component in place, but you go in and you perform one of the previous G2 derivations that we derived of the Actonians themselves component wise. You apply the same derivation to each of the components separately. So that is another, so one can check that that's another derivation, and together those give all the derivations of this algebra. So in the 3x3 case, there's a general formula, which is that the derivation algebra of the 3x3 Hermitian matrices over some norm, with elements in some norm division algebra, K, come from two places. On the one hand, we can take the commutator with any traceless 3x3 anti-Hermitian matrix with elements in K. So that's using the formula that we were showing on the previous slide. Here again, A3 of K would just mean arbitrary 3x3 anti-Hermitian matrices. And the prime here is just a notation that means that I'm now considering the traceless ones. But then plus the derivations of K itself, the derivations of the Actonians, let's say, which just act component-wise without mixing up the 3x3 matrix. And so if we look at how many elements are there here, well, think about a 3x3 anti-Hermitian matrix with Actonian elements. Okay, so there's three off-diagonal elements up here, each of which are Actonians. So that's 8 plus 8 plus 8 elements. 8 plus 8 plus 8 dimensions up there. And then down here, we just have the opposites of those. So these are not independent. So on the off, so we have 24 dimensions coming from the three off-diagonal components. And then on the diagonal now, For if it was a Hermitian guy, we would only have real numbers on the diagonal, but now it's anti-Hermitian, so we only have imaginaries on the diagonal. So we have 7 imaginaries here, 7 imaginaries here, and well, because it's traceless, we don't have an independent 7 imaginaries here. So once we take something here and something, once we take 7 imaginaries here and 7 imaginaries here, whatever we take here, it just has to be minus their sum so that the trace adds up to zero. So we have 8 + 8 + 8 + 7 + 7. So we have 24 + 14 is 38 dimensions. The number of real dimensions in this part of the matrix, in this first part of the algebra, is 38. And then, meanwhile, the derivations of I'm working this out for the particular case where, for the exceptional Jordan algebra, where this is, where K is the Octonians. And again, like we saw before, the derivation algebra for the Octonians is G2. So that's, like we said, that's 14 dimensional. So the total dimension here is 38 plus 14 is 52. And again, if we look back at our earlier classification of the Lie algebras, we see there's only one with dimension 52, which is this one here. So the derivation algebra here is nothing but the next exceptional Jordan algebra, F4. Okay. And so the reason I went to the trouble of writing this down is because what we want to now explain next time is what the geometric meaning of this is, what's going on here geometrically, and how it was understood to extend to all the exceptional Lie algebras and through a nice generalization of this formula. So anyway, that's what I'll explain next time, is that magic square formula. But so now we've met all the Lie algebras we need. We've met all their symmetry groups, and the magic square is going to come from a generalization of this last formula, the symmetry group of the exceptional Lie algebra. And we'll talk about that next time. Any questions? How's the pace? Are people completely lost, or is it followable, or what's the? I know this is a bit of a. It must. Well, what you tell me? Too hot, too cold, or roughly right. There'll be a few exercises in the tutorial, which hopefully will make this hopefully help to make this clearer. And then also the problem set will be basically part of the suggested problem set. Well, I'll have to talk to Gong about this, but we'll be about deriving that this is indeed the general form for the symmetries of the exceptional Jordan algebra, and so hopefully that will help settle things into everybody's understanding.
Maybe I have a question now that I think about. Sorry.
Yes.
I was wondering about the maybe some kind of physical meaning for the Jordan spin, the J spin, Jordan, the Jordan algebra. Is it?
Yeah. Is it? You know what it is? You know, okay, yeah. So, what it is really, the another way, if you want a more physical meaning, is that it is another way to think of it is that it's the, so when you're dealing with spinners, it's really about spinners, which is why it's called J spin. It's the Jordan algebra that has to do with spinners. So I remind you that when you're writing down the Dirac equation, you start by defining the Dirac matrices, the Dirac gamma matrices, which satisfy this property that each of them squares to plus one or minus one, and then they anti-commute with one another. So they're equal to some in 3 + 1 dimensions. You usually write this as that their anti-commutator with one another is equal to -2 times the metric. So those are spinners in Minkowski space. Now you can have spinners in any. You can that's in 3, 1 dimensions, but you can also have spinners in 4 dimensions, in which case this just becomes, instead of the Minkowski metric, this just becomes the sort of Euclidean metric, delta mu nu. So now if you have, this is how you define the end, the Dirac gamma matrices and Euclidean dimensions for Euclidean spinners. So now if you, if you just consider the algebra generated by them, but only taking, only allowing yourself to take these symmetric anti-commutator products of them, that's exactly the J-spin algebra. So in other words, any element of that algebra is basically some A times the identity matrix plus some vector components AI times the ith gamma matrix. So that's an arbitrary element of the algebra. And then if you ask, you know, what is the product where you take the anti-commutator between two guys like this? You'll see it's exactly the J-spin product I mentioned before. So the J-spin algebra is the part of the Dirac, the algebra of Dirac, the full algebra generated by the Dirac matrices is the so-called Clifford algebra. So this is the symmetric part of the Clifford algebra. J-spin is the part of the Clifford algebra that you get if you only generate by taking symmetric products of things. So it has to do with spinners. It has to do with the algebra of spinners, but it's kind of just the symmetric part of it.
Well, listen, what happens to H2O?
That's a good question. So the H2 is also a Jordan algebra, but it turns out to be equivalent to one of the I've created the maximum number of whiteboards. Okay, so maybe I'll just erase those here. Well, that's good to know. I see I can't go more than 12 whiteboards. For any of the H2K, it turns out that for so H2K and H3K, 3x3, the 2x2 and 3x3 matrices over any of the norm division algebras are special. They're all Jordan algebras, but one of the things that makes them special is that there are special isomorphisms between different ones in this case, which don't occur in the general case. And that actually, this is one way to explain why, you know how for small Lie groups, there's certain Lie groups turn out to be, which the classification would normally say are different, turn out to be equal to each other. So like SO3 turns out to be equal to SU2, SO4 turns out to be equal to SU2 times SU2, SO6 is SU4, et cetera. There are these special cases, and many of those turn out to come from these early Jordan algebras, H2 and H3 over the norm division algebras. In fact, they all do. So H2 of K, it turns out, is isomorphic to J spin of N plus one, where N is, sorry, I'm mixing up, there's a bad notation. Let's call it nu plus one, where nu is the dimension of the norm division algebra K. So H2 of the octonions, the 2x2 octonions, turn out to be equivalent to J spin 9. Turn out to be basically the spin algebra, the symmetric spin algebra in 9 dimensions. So it's not that they're not Jordan algebras, but but they're actually very interesting, but they were already included in the classification earlier in the classification in one of the infinite families. You see, the thing which makes H3 of O exceptional, the reason people call it the exceptional Jordan algebra, isn't actually just the fact that it stands out as one extra guy that doesn't fall into any of the previous infinite families. It's that all of the other Jordan algebras have the property that they really come from an associative matrix algebra equipped with the anti-commutator product. Whereas H3O is the only case that does not come from that. It really is intrinsically, yeah, I don't know if I said that clearly, but just like with Lie algebras, you know, often Lie algebras can be expressed as really just ordinary matrix algebras, associative algebras, but just equipped with a commutator as their product. Same with Jordan algebras. Often, in almost all cases, they can be just thought of as coming from ordinary associative matrix algebras, but equipped with the anti-commutator of matrices as their product. But in the exceptional Jordan algebra, it can't. You know, in that case, H3O really has no,
So yeah, H3O, the product, is not defined as xy plus yx.
Oh, no, it is, but that's not an ordinary associative matrix product because...
Oh, right, because it's not associative.
These are octonions, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas in H2O, even though naively it looks like H2O does not come from a associative matrix algebra, because it looks like it's 2x2 octonionic matrices, whose elements are not associative, actually it turns out to be equivalent to this other algebra, the spin 9 algebra, which is explicitly made from associative Dirac matrices. If you see what I mean. Anyway, it's a confusing business, but that part of it, no one needs to know that last bit that I was just saying. So don't, you know, pick your battles. anyway, okay. Well, if there are no more questions, then yeah, I'll see you guys on Monday.